Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They're the folks behind Huzzah! Historical Wargaming for New England. Huzzah takes place May 15th to the 17th, 2020, at the Doubletree in South Portland, Maine. Experience some of the best historical wargaming at Huzzah! Visit www.huzzahcon.com for more information.
Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by Enfilade. Enfilade is a flagship historical wargaming convention for the Northwest Historical Miniature Gaming Society. Enfilade is held annually over Memorial Day weekend at the Red Lion Inn in Olympia, Washington. Enjoy the largest historical miniature gaming convention west of the Mississippi at Enfilade. Visit www.nhmgscitadel.com for more information. Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by The Wargaming Company. Wish you could play a great Napoleonics wargame that's different from the same old stuff? Try ESR. ESR makes Napoleonics accessible, a complete system with you as the core commander. Start an army with ESR box sets or use your existing collection. It's meaty enough for diehards, but friendly for newcomers. Visit thewargamingcompany.com.
Welcome to Wargaming Recon. I'm Jonathan J. Reinhardt. Wargaming Recon is the only member of the TSR Podcast Network to discuss historical and New England gaming. Today, we are joined by a very special guest here. And I know I've been saying that a lot lately, everyone, but that's because we've had a lot of very special guests lately. So I'm actually really excited for today because, as you all know, I've been anti-GW for a long time, but this person, through their videos on Warhammer TV, has made me want to go back to playing Games Workshop stuff and painting Games Workshop stuff, and has excited me more about painting than anyone's done in a long, long time. So I'm referring to, I'm sure you already know, the one and only Mr. Duncan Rhodes, who is a former GW employee, best known for his painting tutorials on Warhammer TV, and he has a brand new venture he's launched called Duncan Rhodes Painting Academy. So Duncan, thank you for joining us on the show today. How are you?
Hello, thank you very much. Yeah, it's nice to be here.
I bet you're getting a lot of these kind of, I bet it's kind of interesting that, like, when you've done this stuff, like you do it because you like it or because it's your job or whatever, and then people have the response that they do to it.
Hmm. Yeah, it's really interesting. It's amazing. It's quite nice. Which is really nice because, you know, I'm being a sensitive person and all. It's I hope people enjoy what we've done. Like you were saying earlier about how, you know, you generally don't view Games Workshop or haven't viewed it in a positive way. It's nice to give a good feeling, you know, and the sort of thing that we've been doing.
I bet a lot of people are kind of curious, and you might tire about talking about your Games Workshop experience, and I don't know. But I bet a lot of people are kind of curious about how you got your start with Games Workshop. Like, where did that come about?
I don't really get tired of it. It's with Games Workshop, I just got a job there in the retail chain. So years ago, I finished my in UK you have A levels before you go on to university. I got my grades and everything. I got a placement at university, but then I went to the cinema with my mate, with my friend, to celebrate. And Terminator 3 had just come out, and when watching that, I was like, oh yeah, that reminds me of Necrons. I wonder what they look like now. When I went back into the store, they'd been completely renovated. This was like the third edition days, the end of third edition. And it just hooked me back into it. So I looked for a summer job, and I enjoyed it so much that I didn't go to university in the end. And through one reason or another, I've been involved with Games Workshop ever since. Up until, well, recently, I suppose. You know, I took just over a year away from the company when I went off and left retail to go and do I suppose what you'd call a real job, working in an office. But I came back into the studio, and for the video stuff, it was just basically being the right place.
What was the year that you actually kind of began with them, like at headquarters, as it was?
Oh, so headquarters would have been, let me think. It would have been 2009 is when I joined in the studio, and I applied for what was called a hobby content provider at the time. These days they're called the army painters. They've kind of evolved since then, but essentially what you would do is paint the stuff that the miniatures that weren't heavy metal ones for the publications or the magazine and things like that. So my part of it was providing content for White Dwarf, where usually what you'd have to do is paint an army as an example army for an article that month, and you'd also produce a painting guide for how you did it at the same time. And that's the kind of thing I really enjoyed, because even in retail, the thing I liked doing the most was helping unlock the hobby for people and basically explain to them how to get the results that they wanted. So it really suited me very well, I think, doing that.
Well, that's fascinating. I'm someone who
expanded that more and more.
I'm sure a lot of people feel this way. I'm not happy with my painting. I don't feel I'm very talented with it. But one thing I've always really enjoyed, especially with GW, was the quality of the painted models, whether it was heavy metal or the armies or whatever. So seeing all that in White Dwarf and seeing the guides was always really handy for me. And then, I mean, as you mentioned, Warhammer TV, the fact that there's painting tutorials on YouTube that people can get has been game changing, I think.
Yes, it's quite weird when you think back to the time when you only had photographs as a painting guide. When you watch a video, you can see so much more. There's so much into it, and having it described as the painter's doing it. There's loads of ones out there. They're all absolutely fascinating, and it's nice to watch the ones now. Then, you know, to see how people do things, and it's to actually show how it's done is such an advancement from just being shown a picture of it's been done. Because I remember looking at it, these guys, when I was a kid, and just not understanding what had happened, and actually really analysing the picture, and trying to deduce what colours have been used and how and when and how it's been applied. And, you know, the one that always used to confuse me the most was when I first got into 40K, it was from the little sort of how to play guide that would be in hobby shops. And in that, there was a painting guide for a Blood Angel in there. And I remember it was four stages. Stage three, everything was kind of like flat blocked in, and I thought it looked quite nice. But when it got to stage four, it was highlighted, and it would be like the red power armor is then highlighted using bleached bone. Like, well, how on earth is that done? Because that colour there isn't bleach bone. So, you know, it was obviously you mix it, but there's no one there actually telling you these things. So actually having a video explaining it is such an advantage to it. So I think I feel I was really lucky to be in the right place at the right time to be able to do this kind of thing. Because over the last,
I think a lot of it really is timing for people for whatever they do. Like, we've been doing this show, I mean, longer than I can keep track of. I've been told we're the longest running tabletop wargaming podcast in existence. And proud of it is we started when podcasting was coming around. And so, like, just being there for whatever the there is has value. So, like, you got lightning in a bottle.
Yes. And it was a whole host of things that all came together, because obviously it's not just me, it does these videos, but Roger was the fellow working behind the scenes to make it all work. And at Games Workshop, it was his idea and him pushing for doing this. And it took him a while to get permission to make an actual working test of it. But we did the How to Paint Citadel Miniatures DVD that came with the book for a while. And he wants to evolve the idea, because in that video, it was my hands doing stuff, but it was always somebody else voicing it and everything. And Roger was always looking at it going, we could do this in a more natural, approachable way. So we kept researching, kept bugging at his boss, and eventually got allowed to do it. And he then got permission to borrow me for, I believe it was 2 days, to test this in the studio. And he set up a whole thing. He arranged all the cameras how he wanted and stuff, started coaching me through what he wanted from it. And we did a guide as to how to build a Riptide battle suit. So there's no painting in it. It's just straight up, you know, part one goes into part two with glue like this and stuff. And this video is so boring and it's so long because there's so many, try to glue on every bit to this model. And there were very strange requirements in the language used in it as well. And it's so dull. But the actual concept proved it. So he then went and showed his boss. His boss watched it for about 2 minutes and they went, yep, this is a goer. And so then they put up a job advert. And Roger came rushing downstairs to find me in the studio. And he was like, they're going to put a job for it. I think you'd be really good at it. Will you apply for it? And I was like, oh, good Lord. I really like my hobby content provider job. I'm not sure. So it was quite a scary time. But it just fit well, because that, you know, those guides were the bit of the hobby content stuff that I really liked the most. So being able to do that on its own full time and kind of like a better way of showing these things, it just worked out so well, because it's really gratifying when you actually see people and talk to them and they show you the models that they painted following guides and advice that you've given. And you can see that it's clicked with them and they've worked it out and they've been able to achieve the things that they want to do. It just makes you feel so good, you know, to really help out people like that. So I just kind of wanted to carry on doing it.
One of the things that's really struck me about bigger and bigger levels the video content that you've done is how, like you mentioned natural, but how natural you are with it, that it doesn't feel like you're teaching a class or you're doing a job. It feels like you're just painting because you like to paint. And you're so relaxed with it. For me, anyway, at least, I have a lot of anxiety about painting, partly because I think I'm not good enough. And I'm sure a lot of people feel that way. But yours is very soothing. And it for me, it conveys a sense of, yeah, you can do this. And so I think that's really helpful for whether someone's been painting for a long time or if they're new to it. It makes them feel a little more comfortable and gives them some courage, I guess, to go ahead and do it. And I found that something that really kind of comes forth from the content you've created more than other people.
No, oh, thank you very much. That was the goal. I mean, Roger was always pushing that. The idea was that it was like having just somebody, you know, your friend Duncan just standing over your shoulder explaining what to do. So, you know, don't make it patronizing. Don't make it too elitist or anything like that. So there was a lot of work before we actually went live and doing it. But that it's great to hear that because that was always the goal. I firmly believe that everybody can learn how to paint these things. It is possible. It's just understanding the technique and how to apply it. And I really do want people to feel like they can do this if they want to. I really hate the idea of, you know, elitist and, you know, just get good and all this kind of stuff. I think that's a really negative way of looking at any hobby. But welcoming new people in is such an important lifeblood of it. And if you can sort of see something and then replicate it in the model you've got, it's such an addictive thing when it makes you feel like, oh, I can do that. I can, you know, I can go and do these things and not be, heaven forbid, you know, embarrassed about getting your models out compared to somebody else in the gaming club or whatever. I do find a lot of fulfillment on it. And I'm glad you say that because that's, you know,
thank you for that.
And speaking of which, I'm sure your painting is better than you think it is. I'm sure it is. Everyone's their own worst critic. I mean, I look at models that I paint all the time and think to myself, you know, that's not as good as I want it to be. And we've had that today. I mean, just this morning we were filming a video that's going up on the Academy tomorrow. And I was thinking to myself, it's a tank basically, and we did a camouflage on it. I was thinking to myself, oh, I should have put more green on that. I could have done this, that, and the other. But no, it's okay because the advice I give in the video is, well, they paint this camouflage as and when, so there's going to be all these varieties of it. So this one is just like that. So don't worry about it. But, you know, even I feel that sort of thing of like,
well, it's funny because that's something I find. I talk with a lot of creatives. So like Tuesday I was recording with Henry Hyde, who wrote the Wargaming Compendium. And I've been in contact with the Perry brothers and just like numerous people, game designers, whatever. And people are always like, oh, you know, I could have wrote those rules better. Or this is one thing. And yet each of us, I think it's common that we feel like, oh, it's really bad. And maybe no one else feels that way. But it's a common feeling, not just among creators, but I think a lot of people. And if you're just like the everyday person, everyday gamer, looking at, say, something you're making, for example, and they might be like, oh, wow, you know, he's an expert. He's a professional. Look at what Duncan's doing. And like, I could never get there. Or like, whatever I do is not good enough. I think it's helpful for them to know that you feel the same way about some of the stuff that you do. And it's just, I think it's kind of funny. We have this kind of baseline, but maybe people don't talk about it as much.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, it's funny. Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny you should mention the Perrys, actually, because a number of weeks ago, I was talking to Alan Perry because we want to do on the site a number of historical miniatures, and we love Perry miniatures. And so we want to have a bunch of those. And we've done a British line infantryman there, but we wanted to do a French soldier to go against him. And I picked one of the old kits, the 1812 to 15 uniform, because I got loads of those in my own armies, mostly those. But then I thought to myself, well, there is that new kit coming out. So I emailed Alan saying, you know, is like, what's best for you? Like, well, what do you think? What do you think we should do? This one, this one? And you get your response saying, well, actually, there's a lot of things on the old kit that should be better and should be changed and stuff. So even he looks back at that old kit. I mean, it's like 10 years old now. But even he looks back at that and goes, oh, there's all these improvements. There's all these things I don't like about it. And with the new kit that they brought out at the end of last year, he's changed them all and improved them all and done the thing that he thinks is much, much better. And I find that fascinating that, you know, like, I love that old kit. I think it's amazing. But he looks at it and goes, you know. Yeah, it's great to see our passion as well. And the new one, in fact, and he showed me the leaflet for the uniforms you get inside that box. And the thing's huge. And that's just because he loves it. He absolutely loves it and wants to make it as best as he possibly could. So it's,
I think also for some people, the names of people they might think, you know, they look at you or they look at some big game designer and they might have a little bit of anxiety about maybe talking to them or trying to approach them or whatever. And every single person, at least that I've ever dealt with, has been truly wonderful. Just so approachable and kind and receptive. And at least for me, like part of it is like, I'll say, like, I'll email you and be like, hey, do you want to come on the show? And I'm like, he's not going to want to come on the show. He's so busy. He has all this, like, why would he want to? Right. No matter who it is. And everyone's just basically like, of course, like, why wouldn't you email us? It's normal. And so I think it's the same for like any gamer, whether they tweet at you or send someone on social media or whatever. Yeah. We're just kind of, we're all in this together. We all love this hobby. So we have that bond there and we like to talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I do my best to respond to people. I'm finding that since the Academy started, I've become really, really busy. So getting time to actually spend a long time discussing things on social media is, it's become a bit of a premium thing, trying to find the time to do it. But if I can, I will, because it's just nice to interact with these people and, you know, offer advice if they need any, or feedback or whatever. But also, you know, the people are inspiring of the kind of things they make, so you can get loads of ideas and stuff from just watching people and, you know, encounter new miniatures you weren't aware of. But it's, I think it's important as well, because I find it odd sometimes the way that, like you say, why email him? He wouldn't respond. But of course I would, you know, it's like, I'll do my best. I find it odd when people put me on a pedestal like that.
I know what you mean.
Some people have called it fame and I don't really like thinking it that way. Yeah, I just like to get involved, you know. And people like yourself and like all the people who watch the videos and people who join that site, all people who followed everything I've done over the years. And my job's ridiculous. I show people how to paint toys for a living. But you know, you guys have allowed me to do this, so I can do something that I really love and be able to feed myself in the process.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to look at it.
The least I can do is spend time talking to somebody.
At the same point, I also think it's important for people to realize, yeah, they should reach out to anyone, right? But there's no obligation, I think, to respond to every message, because then you couldn't be doing the other stuff, right? You literally could not sleep. You literally could not eat. You couldn't do whatever. You couldn't make the content that you make or anyone else makes. Like, imagine if the Perrys responded to every single tweet or a mention they had on social media. They'd never make a mini again. Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's why I think it's helpful to have this other layer. Like, some, when organizations get large enough, they of course have, you know, social media people or whatever, or you find a way to make it work. So like one thing we've done here, we actually have this wonderful community of listeners here who are very generous. And so like there's someone who volunteers their time to moderate. We have this Facebook group that people like in addition to our official page. And so like they moderate it and they do content and they volunteer their time. And even if it's not an official thing, communities kind of tend to kind of coalesce together and you'll find people are supportive. So I think that's helpful too.
Yeah, absolutely. And I must admit, I have quite enjoyed a little thing I found amusing recently is, so now the site's running, there's a contact us section on there. And when you use that email address, I'm the one who receives the email. So there've been some people who've had had like one or two like technical issues or something like that, or they just like want to say, you know, they like the site, what sort of stuff are you going to be doing in the future and things, and I'll reply to them. And it is quite funny and sometimes charming that someone says, oh, my email thing hasn't worked. Oh, okay, no problem, can you just let us know what your transaction number is and we'll get back to you. And they're like, oh, hello Duncan. Hello. So I like that that personal contact. But yeah, it might turn out that we end up with so many that we have to get somebody to help us out with that. But I'd like to keep that. I'd like to keep doing it.
Let's talk about the internet moniker you have, Two Thin Coats. How do you feel about that?
Oh. it's a weird meme that's followed me around. I didn't really, you know, everyone has phrases that they say all the time without realizing it, you know. So I've never told Roger. He says, you know what I'm saying? He says that a lot. So, you know, it's just that people are all like that. And in the videos, it turns out that's reinforced then, because the actual bit of advice I'm giving is turning out to be one of those things I'm not really thinking about so much as I'm saying it, but it is actually what you do. You know, if the first one's streaky or see-through or whatever, two thin coats, and there you go. And what I'd always say is apply a second thin coat. But people say two thin coats to me, which I find interesting because it's slightly different from what I feel I say. I don't mind because it's quite charming. It's never mean-spirited or anything like that. It's almost like a sort of a shared joke, and I find it amuses people. They like it. They like sharing it around and showing it to me. And it's also its actual honest to good advice. You know, if when you learn to paint these miniatures, it's not something that you really realize, first of all, but it actually applies to painting all kinds of things. I mean, recently I've been doing some redecorating, and yeah, two thin coats on the wall, that way you get a better finish, don't you? so I kind of see it as a sign of goodwill. It's kind of how it feels to me. It's a nice connection with the community. And the only hope I have is that people don't just take it as a joke.
Yeah, I don't. This is actually so my advice, and this is what for me. It's funny because I was talking with some members of my team, and telling them how excited I was that you agreed to come on. And one of them said, "Oh, so you're gonna have two thin coats on?" And I was like, "What are you talking about?" And it didn't register because, like you were saying, the fact that you say apply a second thin coat, to me, there's a difference. And I was like, who is two thin coats? Like, what? And they had explained it to me. So then I was like, oh, I get it. And then I started noticing it more and more that people would use that in reference to you. And I've never taken it as them being making a pun or anything. I think they for them, it's like a password, right? That to show that they're part of the club and that like they get it and that they're a fan. And I think they really do take it to advice. Yeah. And I agree with you. It seems really, at least for me anyway, it's very contradictory. Like you buy some paints, right? And shouldn't you just open them up and use them right from the container? Why do you need to do anything to them? But you do. And so it's helpful to have that reminder, yes, I think, for people.
Yes. Yeah. I remember very early on, I was using the palette in the video, of course, and you use the palette to get all your paint ready or whatever. And there are a lot of, I mean, back then, everyone was very cynical towards Games Workshop. And, you know, I can understand why. But the assumption was that I was using it to make people waste paint. And I found like, oh, but I'm literally showing you why I'm doing that. And you can see the difference like actually there before you. I always thought that was very amusing. But it's, I think people understand the point now. And I've certainly seen the results of people actually painting the models like that and getting better results from it. Then actually, you know, odd things come from it. And at shows like at Adepticon or something like that, you'd hear somebody shout it at me across the hall, like, "Hey, two thin coats!" Somebody made a shirt for me as well. I believe it was at Nova, just over a year ago now, maybe a year and a half. Someone made a green shirt with hashtag two thin coats on me. And the two of us had a photo.
Oh, selfie. That's wonderful. It's nice when they care so much that they do that kind of stuff. Oh, okay.
Yeah, we very nearly used it for the Academy, actually. We very nearly went for that name. And we did actually look up, you know, is the domain, does it exist for toothincoats.com? Oh, and somebody owned it. Moving on, you know, there's still potentially could go with that name. But we then got, after the Academy launched, I got a message on Twitter from a chap who was the owner of toothincoats.com. And he said that he and his friends had bought it as a joke because they thought, you know, having a laugh about it and stuff, and like, oh, maybe not what I'm gonna want. And then it turns out, oh yeah, I'm making a site, and they're like, oh, do you want it? There's often it, you know, for like free of charge, like, oh, all right, not sure what we put there, but very curious. But we kind of thought in the end that using my name was perhaps more accessible. Like you say, it's all part of the club if you do the tooth and coats thing, whereas we wanted to be accessible to everybody, and you might hear my name when it comes to learning how to paint.
Yeah,
stuff.
Definitely. So let's talk about the Painting Academy. What kind of caused you to think that you'd want to branch out and move beyond your experience with Games Workshop into doing something different?
Roger and I wanted to, both of us for years and years had like a dream of doing your own thing, like having your own company. And it just seemed like it was at a point where both of us were thinking, well, if we never actually try doing this, we never will do this. You know, we're kind of getting to the point where we might start getting too old to have a go at doing it. So that started ticking over. And then we start coming out with all these ideas of different things that we could do. And, you know, like how we could set it up, what it could look like, and what content we could put there and that sort of thing. And we actually got quite excited about it. So it's kind of, for me, it feels like an evolution of, you know, working in retail and really enjoying giving painting lessons in the store, and then working in the studio and doing painting lessons that would appear on White Dwarf, and then on Warhammer TV, you know, that was the How to Paint book. Then on Warhammer TV, it got bigger and bigger. Now it's kind of, it feels like I'm able to expand it into all the various aspects of this hobby that I love and I've loved for years and years. Because, you know, I've not, Games Workshop's not an island and that everyone there is completely unaware of what's outside of it. People, you know, do see what's there. And I've looked at all these other miniatures and games and all kinds of things for years and years. I've never just been just Games Workshop. So now it's exciting that I can actually start showing these other things that I like as well. And what has been really fun is that it's been introducing different things to people that they weren't aware that were there. So we had on our YouTube channel, the first one was, of course, Sister of Battle, because you don't want to alienate your audience, you know. But then we did a Stormtrooper, and people in the comments saying they had no idea there was a war game of Star Wars. Well, there you go. You like Star Wars. Yeah. We've had the same for A Song of Ice and Fire as well. We did the Lannister Guardsman the other week for that. All of a sudden, people are like, there's a Game of Thrones war game? Well, yeah, there kind of is. So that's really fun, you know, and people are now starting to dip their toes into other things. And I find that Warhammer is a great central kind of core part of the hobby, in that everyone plays Warhammer. If you go to a new town and you want to play a war game, someone there's going to play some kind of Warhammer. Do you know what? If you really like particular aspects of history, like you're really into World War II, there's lots and lots of World War II stuff out there. If you really like video games and you love Fallout, well, there's a Fallout war game as well. And I'm enjoying showing these things to people and then showing them what these miniatures are actually like, and you know how to paint them. You know, it's been a really exciting.
What about it scares you the most? It's interesting for you to say that. Yeah.
That we've got to make a certain amount of money to be able to survive. And we were trying to work out, so we looked into how do you monetize doing something like this? Like, could we survive on our road? And we thought, all right, so if you go on YouTube and you have advertising revenue and whatever, can you survive? Well, only if you have a lot of subscribers, like a lot more than what I expect we'd ever get. So we couldn't just do it like that. Okay, so what else is there? We could try and sell merchandise. It's unreliable. Roger's got a family. He's got two kids, and, you know, he's got to look after them. So it's, you know, it's important. We can't just mess around with this or take it lightly. So what are the other options? Well, we could do a subscription-based model. We could do basically a Patreon thing, or we could ask for donations or whatever. And we started looking more towards Patreon and, you know, all right, so we can offer some free stuff, but also some monetized stuff. How many people do we need? We did the maths. That seems realistic. We reckon we could do that. And then Roger started talking about, well, what if we did our own site? You know, could we do this? We do have the... people know your name. If we use that, then people will be able to find it and understand what they're going to get there. I mean, I find it super weird it being named after me, like really weird. It's not what I wanted to go for. It was all Roger's idea, that was. But it meant that we were able to get, on launch, we were able to get the interest and we've been able to get the number that we need. So, you know, it's... it would be... We're not going to die, is only how I can put it. You know, we're not going to starve. It's all about trying to build up and get it healthy and, you know, make sure that we're able to keep on top of our equipment running and pay for all our bills and stuff like that. So that's what was scary. You know, would we be able to make enough money to keep going? By all accounts, it looks like
we'll be able to. Well, I think part of it, of course, is, you built up an audience from your prior work. And obviously, it's not just you. You keep on mentioning Roger, and it's really good that you do. But whereas you've been on camera, I think people kind of draw attention to you. But also, I think it's valuable that your price point, I think, is very affordable. You're under £4 a month, which in American, that's like $8, I think. So under like $6 or $7 a month. And that's nothing. People pay more than that for things they don't use, like gym memberships. And this is something people would use. So I think that that's helpful.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Well, I'm glad you say that. We purposely priced it as low as we possibly could. We did the maths, like I said, and worked out what we think we'd get and, you know, is this going to be enough for us to keep going? We really did our homework on it. In a perfect world, we'd have it all free, like absolutely free. I'd love to do that. But the reality is if we did that, then we wouldn't be here for very long. People have been understanding about that. It's actually been nice to see people saying that it's a bargain, and we've been trying to make a point of how often we're going to be updating the site too. So there's new videos every week, and the amount of videos depends upon the complexity of the model. So this coming week we've got two videos, and that's because this week we Monday was Easter Monday, so we've been filming for 2.5 days this week. And there was quite a complex one, our first of our techniques video, which was like quite a intense filming to work out what we want to say and how we want to say it. Second one for this tank, there was, again, a lot of new stuff in there. So it's been quite intense. You know, we're very quick and very efficient at doing this sort of stuff. But we've been trying to make it so that each week you're getting multiple videos. So it's like, oh, okay, so you pay £4 and you've got access to the archive of ones that we've made so far. Plus, in that month, you're going to be averaging about 8 new videos. I'm glad that people are supportive of it and are liking it. And really, this really is just the beginning. In a year's time, we expect we're going to have Well, a lot of videos on there, like a lot. And I think they bring so many different subjects. It's going to be fascinating seeing what people start asking for as we go forward. Lots of very standard how to practice them. And then in the actual miniatures, we're going to be putting all that stuff into practice. So I'm wondering, is the tuition on that miniature then going to get a little bit lighter, or am I still going to go into it in each one? And we'll see. We'll find our way through it. But it's exciting, all the
I think
same.
it's
It's
really
all new
interesting
ground
how you
for me.
mentioned that. Ideally, everything would be free. And I'm someone who's of that mindset. And of course, it's different doing what I'm doing than what you're doing. It's similar in some ways, but very different. And so, like, we offer all the stuff we do for free. But the way we're able to do that is by advertising, by having sponsors. And it's something I don't love. I don't like that before people listen to an episode, they get, what is it, a minute and a half, I think it is right now, of ad content before. But we're very protective of all that. So, like, we only sign sponsorship agreements with companies and people that we believe in, that we fully support. We've turned down lots of money from people where it just it wouldn't be a good fit. So even though knowing that we're doing the best we can, like, we still hate it, but the alternative would be that, like, we'd charge people for stuff. And, like, that's hard. So, like, we've done the Patreon thing, and that's been so-so. And we did a
Nice.
Kickstarter
Yeah.
that finished, what was it, in January, I guess we did. So we raised a bunch of money to kind of help us through for this year, which is ironic because part of it was we go to conventions and things, and usually we don't have to pay for stuff because we have agreements or whatever. But like, you still have to pay for your hotel, and with the pandemic, we don't have any of that going on. So we're like, we have this money now that we're going to use for stuff. So like, now we're trying to figure out what to use it for. So we're thinking like, oh, maybe we can upgrade our equipment and get more lighting and like try to work our way through all this kind of stuff or other things to do. And it's funny kind of thinking about how that's going to go. And like, for us, this isn't a, like, it's a full-time job, but it's not officially our real jobs. It's not what pays our bills or anything. We want it to pay for itself. So we're in a completely different boat from you there. But I think a lot of the core methodologies are the same. And I think a lot of people are doing aspects of this for things that they do. And it's kind of, I think it's important to kind of look at stuff and try to see how much effort you have to have put into it and what kind of gain you get. And I think it's true for painting models and building your armies and all that kind of stuff. And
Yeah, it's a lot that goes into it, isn't there? A lot you don't really think about. Certainly is true with all the filming. The sort of the to get the standard of footage that we're happy with, it's been, it's expensive stuff, getting all the cameras, the lighting, the sound equipment, getting the desk, getting the gear for the desk, all the equipment for it. It's been quite an investment to get it all going. We had to get a powerful computer for Roger as well to be able to handle the footage, because on the close-up we shoot that in 4K now. Now what we're able then to do is able to zoom in further that way, so we're able to get really, really high-end stuff, but none of it comes cheap. But it does mean that we're able to then give the very best when it comes to actually showing what to do. And we're really excited about what that means in the future of how much detail we can go into. So it's, yeah, super exciting. But I think since the launch of the site, it's just like, oh, thank God people are signing up. I'm really
Well, your
worried of
video.
like, oh God, I'm going to have to go and find a job. When you become self-employed, it's a scary process. But do you know what? I tell you what, if anyone out there listening isn't self-employed, but is able to do it, has the right mind for it, and I definitely recommend it, because it's so nice to be your own boss. It really is.
I don't have that
There's such
luxury,
a
but
sense of freedom.
whereas we're here in the States, I know over in the UK, you guys are in lockdown, where each state is kind of different. My state has a strong advisory to not go, and I work for a municipality. So we're all working from home. So in a sense, it kind of feels like I'm my own boss. And it's been liberating, actually. Yeah, and then it'll end at some point,
Yeah,
thankfully.
all of a
It will
sudden,
all go back.
oh,
I'll be like, oh,
freedom.
darn it.
It's all good.
But it'll be nice in ways too. I have to say, the quality of your videos, not just like the content and everything, but the actual video quality is fantastic. And I'm sure most people look and think like, oh, look, it's a nice video. But like, knowing some of what goes into it, I really appreciate all the extra attention to detail for equipment choices and placement of stuff that you do. And it really helps to make it feel like a more fluid, more personal experience. And it's interesting to hear you say that you're using 4K for those close-ups, because most people think, oh, like 4K, like, why would I want that? Or just like, it's cool, so I should have it. But the fact that you've really managed to think like, this is going to allow you to get extra close and provide better detail for a technique. So like this, I know with some videos that you've done, it's been really helpful because you can actually see the actual brush strokes on the miniature and to see how you're applying the effects. So like, for example, with GW's contrast paints, I think people get confused by them because I know they're very controversial, and people, I think, have trouble understanding the proper way to apply them.
Yeah.
And so like, you've done videos where you use them, and to actually see up close how you're doing it makes a big difference.
Yes. Yeah. Well, it's not the actual footage in the video and the completed thing isn't necessarily 4K, but we shoot it in 4K, which means we're able to then zoom in without any loss of quality. So, I think it's going to be. It's funny you mentioned the contrast paint. Actually, that is one. That is the techniques video we've been doing. Actually, going into detail as to what it is, how to apply it, all that sort of
stuff. It is.
I wonder what people think about that. It's going to be. It's all new territory. but it's good that you should say that you like the attention to detail of how the surroundings are done, because I mean that's so the way Roger and I, my team work pans out when it comes to actually doing a video is I'm all about the actual content of what the thing it is that we're doing. That's my realm, you know, this is how you do it, these are the stages, this is the equipment required, this is what things should look like. Roger's all about how the thing looks around it. So all the set dressing and all the background stuff, that's all of his work, all the way the lighting is done, you know, that's him really flexing his muscles with that. And he loves that kind of thing. Absolutely loves it. He's so proud of the shots being clean and sharp, you know, everything in focus, everything arranged just so on the table. And in the background, he's having fun teasing videos that we're going to be
doing. I've been looking at that kind of stuff and wondering what's there, what does it mean?
You have to like squint to work out what it is.
That's wonderful.
Yes, it's usually things that we're going to be doing.
I'm sure you must get asked this a lot, but do you have any favorite models that you just love painting, and why are they your favorites?
I do. There are a lot. I love my Napoleonics. I really, really love Napoleonics, and I just enjoy painting their uniforms. I enjoy like the because they a lot of the uniforms are absurd, you know, just how detailed they are. But I like painting them because I just think they look so nice, especially with the cross belts and everything on them. So I also enjoy when I'm painting them, working out the most efficient way I can of painting them to the standard I want for my own stuff, which we then, you know, writing down, and we're going to turn all those into videos. But yeah, they're great. I love doing those. I really like painting ancients as well. I did two hoplite armies actually a few years ago. I did Spartans and Athenians, and I keep thinking that I'd like to do a successor army. So everything in the line of thorax, you know, white armor, and like a massive wall of pikes in the middle. So I better, you know, get used to painting those, I suppose. But I like it's human soldiers is what I really enjoy painting, kind of fantasy human soldiers. So I think that's why I've taken so much to Song of Ice and Fire, because they're sort of medieval but sort of fantasy at the same time. So I love the Lannister troops from that, because they look like high medieval stuff, and lots of bright red with lots of gold and detail and stuff. I really enjoy painting my Lannisters, which reminds me, I've got the Kingsguard. I need to get them done. There's loads and loads. There's absolutely loads. I mean, on my desk just to the left of me here, I've got lots of random odds and ends.
Yes.
I've recently started painting. Have you ever heard of War Gods? Yeah, that's right. Ooh. Yeah. Now, years ago, I saw they were doing a Kickstarter for War Gods of Olympus. Right now, I like ancient Greek, so I like hoplite armies. I like fantasy. The images they were showing was basically that in the style of 5th or 6th edition Warhammer Fantasy. And I was like, this is like my everything. This is what I want. So I signed up for the Kickstarter and signed up for the Athenians on it, and that passed and everything, and I got sent my Athenians. But they were doing a rule book, which I was then waiting to be able to understand, so I knew what to do with the models I'd got. And it took a while, so I just kind of forgot about it. But anyway, came out a few weeks ago. It would have been launched in a big way at Adepticon if that hadn't gone forward. Sweet. I'll buy a rule book, so I'm waiting for that to turn up. So at the moment, on my desk to the left of me is the Athenians that I've been building up. And these models are beautiful. They really are. They're such, they're metal miniatures. That's
right. I got a pile of, have you heard of...
That's another thing I'm excited.
No, I'm sorry. Have you heard of Clash of Spears? No, that's good. Just because you were talking about ancients and Kickstarters, we had backed the Clash of Spears Kickstarter. Yes. And so I have a collection of them still in the box. I haven't quite figured out how I want to assemble them. But they're next to me as well. And you're talking about that. I'm thinking, oh man, I should get to work on those.
Nice.
So I'm which are Imperial Rome and Republican Rome. I'm a Roman guy. And my buddy and co-host Adrian, I think he got, I'm going to refer to them as Gauls, but I don't think that's actually what they call them in it. Or maybe it is. I can't remember. But he tends to go either Carthaginian or Gauls, that kind of stuff. So he's going to be working on those. We had, we had Alvaro on, not his brother, on the show and talked about the game and the rules and all that kind of stuff. And we're just really excited about that. I love Ancients in particular. We've done a lot of like Hail Caesar and things like that. We love all like the Warlord products and work our way through that. But yeah, Ancients is a lot of fun.
I'll have a look into Clash of Spears. So a friend of mine, he's been wanting to do the Carthaginians for something like 15 years, and he's finally got around to doing it, because at the moment, you know, obviously everyone's at home, so he's like, oh, new projects. Offer that big box of Carthaginians where you get the veterans and you get the Libyan spearmen and stuff. And he's like, oh, are you gonna do an army to go against it of this era? And it's like, this is, I see why the Rome Total War games are set beginning in this kind of time period of the Punic Wars, because you've got so many of these factions that it's like Warhammer, they can all fight each other. So I'm really being pushed towards doing a Ptolemaic successor army, having a massive pike phalanx. That's some more models over there on my desk.
When you paint, do you have any sort of equipment that you find? Do you feel like that there's any certain equipment that you consider essential for when you're tackling a project, whether it's painting or assembling or just things like that you can't do without?
There's certain brushes I use a lot. So the medium base brush from Citadel. So it's a synthetic brush, so the bristles after a while will start to fray a little bit. But until they fray a lot, they're actually incredibly useful for just fast blocking in of colors, especially if you twist them just so, you can just make the bristles all just sort of spring to whereabouts you want them to be. If we take those, blocking all of the Lionthorax armor first of all, then blocking all the red for their tunics, then blocking all the bronze, the shields and helmets and stuff. So that brush, one I definitely recommend. I would have like a three or four of them of various states of fraying on the bristles, and then just jump to the next one, you know, when one of them gets unusable. I think so. There's a bunch of army painted metallics I find are really, really good. They're very smooth, very like super shiny as well as they're dry. And on my miniatures, I like on the clothing to have a nice mat. I've actually got a bottle of AK Varnish, AK Interactive, which was recommended to me. And it's so matte, I actually have to mix in Citadel's Contrast Medium.
Oh, my.
Which is how dull it is once it finishes. But I don't like my miniatures being too shiny on, don't want to be shiny, but I definitely recommend that if you want a matte finish to things. Mechanica Standard Grey is a spray primer. I love that colour. I use it loads. So that's another thing. What else? I'm having a lot of fun at the moment. I've been using loads of different companies and, you know, mixing them up to get different effects on bases and things. Loads and loads.
I've been
oh, one thing that I would recommend for people is to get
no please, one thing you would recommend.
I'd recommend they get either I'd recommend they get, there's two contrast paints which I recommend to anybody, Black Templar and Wildwood. The reason for them is they're really strong colors, so whenever you paint them over something, they really dominate it. So they're great for if you're painting a miniature with a great coat, for example, and you can see the kind of the coat's leafing open and you can see underneath it, it's just like a flat block with nothing on it, no detail or anything. Painting it with Wildwood just makes it fade away. Likewise with Black Templar, if you're doing something where you've shaded it black and you want to keep it clean like that, being able to run Black Templar into specific recesses if the shade's not strong enough to help separate one detail from another, it's so easy to use and it's so useful. It's like drawing with ink, you know. Once you get the hang of not having much of it in your brush and just letting it run into those corners and stuff, it's so good, it's so useful. I carry these things around with me now whenever I'm going painting, like if I'm going to the studio.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, I'll make sure I take those two things with me.
For me, painting miniatures feels like a chore. But one thing that I do love to paint now, I've been doing a lot of it, is I'm building and painting a lot of MDF. So I I love Things from the Basement. I'm not sure how familiar you are with them. Over in the UK, they're sold through Foreground. But like I've done a whole set of like feudal Japanese buildings and things like that.
Yes.
And so I was using a lot of like GW paints or Army Painter paints. And I love Vallejo paints, for example. And then realized I don't really need to. So like I used craft paints, and that was a whole learning curve for me to be like, wait, let me go find what's a good craft paint to go use and to get the effect for this. But even when I do that, probably one of my favorite GW paints to use is actually their Sterling Mud and Sterling Battlemire, just for like all the basing. They're beautiful.
Oh, yes.
And
yes,
I've tried analogs to it from other companies and nothing compares. Nothing's just as good. But for me, that's an essential paint for people to use.
Oh, yes. They're really useful, those texture ones. Yeah. I like the Agrella and Badland one, the crackle one.
Yes.
It doesn't crackle very much, but.
You mentioned the two videos that you're going to have coming out soon. Beyond that, can you tease any other content that you're going to be releasing either through the Painting Academy or through your YouTube channel or anywhere?
Oh, on the site. Okay. Yeah, I guess so. So we've got next week's going to be a big video, a big, big video of a model that I think a lot of people would never, ever, ever expect me to paint. So we expect that one's probably going to take the entire week of filming, but it's going to be a big, you know, a big centerpiece thing. Going forward, our plan is we've been trying to kind of showcase the various games that we're initially covering. We've not done all of them yet, but the idea is to try and cover the major factions in these games and to pick out some characters too. So, for example, with A Song of Ice and Fire, for example, there's so many factions in the game, we kind of want to paint a regular trooper from each, but also some key characters. And I would say the same is true for things like Age of Sigmar. To cover a lot of those factions on there. And if you're seeing things where there's like a particular soldier, which might seem like a solo thing, we kind of want to paint the rivals of that as if it's like a range of things. So, for example, we've got the Napoleonic British infantryman on there. We also want to paint a French soldier, a Russian soldier, an Austrian soldier, you know, so sort of like round out those ones. So there's going to be plenty of that, because for us to do these regular soldier videos, we can turn them out quite quickly. And that way we can cover things and put in their little things that I don't think people might necessarily be aware of. I mean, for example, I'm really excited to do a video where we use one of the transfers for Shields and a Roman from Little Big Men Studios. I think people are going to be really surprised by those transfers because they're amazing and they look so good and they're so easy to use. But a lot of people who will join the site might have any other experience with Warhammer so far. So to see something like that, it's going to be really new to them. So, yeah, you know, a lot. We don't have to do a whole bunch of Punic War things, because that's a great period to do if you're doing Ancients. World War II is just going to keep on getting expanded on. But the idea is every month we want to do a big model, and there's a whole load from Games Workshop that we missed out over the last 2 years or so. So we're going to be dipping into some of those and other ones that they've got on the way. Yeah, I know I'm a bit vague on some of that, but yeah, there's lots of regular troopers, and we're going to be picking out some characters, and we've got a few characters that Roger and I both really, really like that we want to do. But I think you'll see more stuff from Modiphius Entertainment. We've got a bunch of models from them that we're going to do. And there's going to be some Privateer Press stuff as well.
So if people want to join the Painting Academy, how do they go about doing it?
Oh, it's dead easy. You just go to duncanrhodes.com.
Get used to it, good sir.
And, God, that feels weird using my name as an internet address. But anyway, that's where it is. and on there you can see examples of things. There are a number of free videos, so if you just want to see what kind of thing we do, you can watch them on there. They're also on a YouTube channel, which is Duncan Rhodes Painting Academy. And in the there's a big join now orange button, information, so basically, you know, how you want to pay and stuff, and then sign up, and then you got access. It's a monthly subscription, so £3.99 has you access for the full month. And it's reoccurring. You can cancel at any time, and you can still view the site for the rest of the month if you cancel straight away. At the moment on there, I believe there's something like 18 videos, with two more being added this week. I think that's how many there are. But yeah, there's going to be lots and lots of content on there. But yeah, if you want to check out the site, there's lots, like I say, there's videos you can see for free, and there's also a gallery
and
so you can see the
miniatures. People want to just keep up to date with you with all the things that you're doing in general in life and stuff that's not necessarily the Painting Academy, but might be related to any social media or whatever, how can they find you online?
Well, I am on Instagram at Duncan J. Rhodes, and I am on Twitter as well at Two Thin Coats, which is, if you want to chat to me, that's the easiest way to get hold of me. And you can see what I tend to use. Instagram tends to be photographs, like really nice photographs of things that I've done that Roger will make. We also will show what we've been doing in the academy with some nice photographs of the models we painted. On Twitter, that's much more my kind of blogging thing, I guess, in which I talk about anything, even different things like video games. Speaking of which, I've been talking to recently, so I don't get Final Fantasy VII spoiled for me, seeing as I've been playing that. But on there, you'll see work in progress.
Cool. Well, I hope people take the time to check all that out. And I'm glad that you're doing so well with the Painting Academy. And I wish you continued success with it. I'm very excited about it. I'm not yet a member, but I do anticipate signing up. Well,
thank you very much. And also, thanks to everybody, whether you're a member or not, just for following my bizarre adventure over the last half year now. It's been a scary ride, but people have been incredibly supportive, and I don't think I'll ever forget it.
Well, I want to thank you for being on the show, Duncan. It's been a true pleasure having you, really. This has me giddy with excitement, is what it is. But it's been a joy, really, to have you here, and I'm sure our listeners have appreciated it. So I just want to also... Oh, you're welcome. I want to remind everyone that, of course, we are on all the things everywhere as Wargaming Recon, from painting in the sky to sidewalk chalk. Wherever you look, you will find us as Wargaming Recon. And I want to make sure you remember that we will have more episodes coming out soon, new episodes every other week as we continue with the podcast. Plus, one thing I'm doing for the duration of the pandemic is I'm doing those Monday through Friday, 10:30 a.m. pandemic coffee break live streams on Facebook. They get saved to our Facebook page and then uploaded to YouTube afterwards, where you can hear me just talk about all sorts of stuff, anything from mental health to what I'm doing to whatever. It's a lot of fun so that we don't feel like we're isolated during these times. But thank you, everyone, for taking the time to listen to this episode of Wargaming Recon. Be sure to check out all the stuff Duncan has going on. And remember, no matter how busy you are, no matter what's going on in your life, no matter how much time you're spending looking at painting videos, you know that you have to keep on gaming. So that was a really good interview that we've had with Duncan Rhodes of the Duncan Rhodes Academy. And right now I want to transition to our Lumber Mill segment, which is sponsored by Things from the Basement. And today I want to talk to you about how it's getting hot in here. No, not like that song, that American hip-hop song, no. I'm talking about chimneys. So I want to talk about the chimney from Things from the Basement's industrial range. And this thing is a monster. It is huge, really the tallest of all of the kits I think I've ever assembled for them. And I believe it measures 13.25 inches tall. That's over a foot tall, people. It's gigantic, just epically tall. Perfect for 28 mil scale figures, of course. It'd be way out of scale for 15 or 20s. But this thing is beautiful. It's super easy to assemble. The instructions, when I had started this, weren't 100% up to date. They had pictures in them that didn't match the final product. And sometimes, very, very rarely, but sometimes that happens with Things from the Basement, where when they are creating their photo shoot from their demo products and everything, and they're putting it all together, they're like, oh, and they'll make some notations about how to improve it, which I think is amazing. And very, very rarely, but it does sometimes happen, but again, very rarely, that the instructions don't get updated with new pictures to reflect that. The instructions are now fixed because I had talked with Jorg about it because I had some confusion at the time. And this just goes to show how responsive Things from the Basement is as a company, how wonderful Jorg is, and how much they value customer service. They have very quickly updated the instructions and walked me through what was going on. I actually thought maybe I was missing some pieces because it turned out I wasn't. And so very quickly was able to take care of that. As I said, the kit is easy to assemble. It's really straightforward. It has a nice solid foundation to it as you put the things together. They slot in well. It makes sense. And you can tell just by looking at stuff how it should go together. It is one of the few exceptions to my rule of pre-painting your kit before you build it. And I don't mean like completely pre-painting it, but you know, putting base coat on, spray if you use a rattle can or if you use a you know, an airbrush or whatever. This is one where I would say don't do that. I think overall you can paint this completely after you assemble it, and there might be one minor exception to that. As you get near the top of it, there's like three sections that are narrower chimney. Whatever pieces you're going to use for the top one, you might want to actually paint the inside before assembly, because you can see that from when you're using it. And so that's something that you might want to consider about. I painted my whole thing red, and you might want to do that for the inside as well, because it is brick, or you might want it to be black to represent the smoke and the and all that kind of stuff. And I would also suggest that you don't follow the instructions in one part, which is I would not glue the entire thing together. So I would glue the bottom two sections, which are the bigger, fatter parts. And then I would leave like the top three taller, narrower parts not glued to the base. Mainly because I think you're going to be better off for storage. Because as I said, this thing is a monster. It's huge, right? It's really tall. And finding a way to store that can be difficult. And also, if you're going to be bringing this to events, if you're running games with it or anything, that can be really hard to do. So I would suggest, again, not gluing the whole thing together. So just having these two sub-assemblies. And I find with mine, I had glued it together, and then I was like, oh, wait, no, I don't want to do that. So I separated it at those points that I just mentioned, and I let it dry. And I find that it goes back in and out easy enough, but it doesn't just like topple out or anything. It is secure. So that's something I would suggest that you do. This retails for $16.50 from thingsinthebasement.com. Like I said, it's from the industrial range. It's a chimney, so it would work with any of their industrial pieces. You could use it for just about any time period, any sort of thing. And I think you can just have a lot of fun with this. And this was just like a really nice piece that does well with painting, some dry brushing. You can pick out the odd bricker here of a different color if you want to add a little extra, you know, flair to it. You can add some smoke effects inside and the top, all that kind of stuff. So I had a lot of fun. I sprayed it with a colonial red that I have from Rust-Oleum. And I actually left, so with things from the basement, I spray when they're on the sprue. So the edges inside were not covered with paint, but I kind of like that because it gives this kind of look of like mortar or things. So like around the edges of stuff, you kind of get this breakup of the black. And then I used some dark tone or strong tone by Army Painter ink wash throughout the whole thing. And just kind of give some nice effects about smoke and smoke damage throughout. So it's been really cool. It's a great piece, and I highly recommend it. It's great for people of all skill levels. So you should check that out, thingsinthebasement.com. And that is our Lumbermill segment.
Are you always on the go? Why not take Wargaming Recon with you? If you use an app like Pocket Casts, you can listen to your favorite episodes of Wargaming Recon on your mobile device. Wargaming Recon is a proud member of the TSR Podcast Network. Visit wargamingrecon.com/TSRPN for more information and to learn about the other good shows on the network. This recording is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike license. Many thanks to Andrew and Court for inspiring the show's name. Wargaming Recon is dedicated to the memory of longtime listener Andrew. I ask all listeners to join me in a moment of silence in memory of Andrew. Thank you to everyone who backed our 2020 podcast season on Kickstarter. In particular, I would like to thank Bob Yates, Cigar Box Battle, Enfilade Convention, Jason Elliott, leader of TSR Games, John Vogel, Lead Bears Tufts, Nate Taylor of Dwarven Forge, Ryzen Phoenix GameCon, and Stefan Pagoni, founder of Dwarven Forge. We couldn't have been successful without the help of all of you. Thank you so very much, and hope you are enjoying this 2020 podcast season. Wargaming Recon is made possible by listeners like you. Become a Patreon backer to get behind-the-scenes content and new episodes before everyone else, starting at $1 per month. Visit wargamingrecon.com/Patreon to become a Patreon backer. Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by The Wargaming Company. Wish you could play a great Napoleonics wargame that's different from the same old stuff? Try ESR. ESR makes Napoleonics accessible, a complete system with you as a core commander. Start an army with ESR box sets, or use your existing collection. It's meaty enough for diehards, but friendly for newcomers. Visit thewargamingcompany.com. Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by Enfilade. Enfilade is a flagship historical wargaming convention for the Northwest Historical Miniature Gaming Society. Enfilade is held annually over Memorial Day weekend at the Red Lion Inn in Olympia, Washington. Enjoy the largest historical miniature gaming convention west of the Mississippi at Enfilade. Visit www.nhmgscitadel.com for more information.
Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They're the folks behind Huzzah! Historical Wargaming for New England. Huzzah takes place May 15th to the 17th, 2020, at the Doubletree in South Portland, Maine. Experience some of the best historical wargaming at Huzzah! Visit www.huzzahcon.com for more information.